Podcast.
The thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to Pulse of the Pack. We are recording on... well, I guess we'll call it Loser Wednesday. I don't have a really good name for it when the Packers lose. But Game 7 of the World Series tonight. I know most of you, from what I'm reading on my Twitter timeline, don't want to listen to Joe Buck. So here I am. Hopefully I am what you consider an upgrade at least. Jacob Westendorf, your host. I'm also with Jason Perrone from the great state of, well, currently in the state, great state of Minnesota. He's not from there. But Jason, how's it hanging?
All is well. I think a couple days removed from the tough loss on Sunday, Game 7 of the World Series. Tonight, we're recording this on Wednesday night. And we all know how the Monday Night Football contest ended. So I'd have to say, Jacob, I'm markedly better now than I was on Sunday evening.
Well, somebody that was talking to you as that happened, I can vouch for that. But that's just how it works with you. You know, the nickname Upbeat Lollipop is – certainly one that fits in a sarcastic nature. Which reminds me, we have something new for you guys. Some of you have used it. Thank you to those who have. We have a Snapchat account now. We are Packer Pulse, just like our Twitter account. So go ahead, give us a follow, send us questions. We have a couple tonight from the Snapchat account, so you can send us questions there, comments, concerns. I will be sending you stuff from when I'm at Lambeau Field, just to give you guys a glimpse into the stadium for those of you that cannot be there. But give us a friend ad, whatever it is they call it on that app. I'm still not very well versed in it, but we give our keys to the game. We talk afterwards. Come for my massive dip lip and stay for the analysis of Jason Perrone. Is that a good way to put it, Jason?
That was second to none. I would have definitely failed had I tried. So great job, Jacob. This is why you are the face of the franchise.
All right, well, I will be Aaron Rodgers if you will be my Brett Hundley or Jordy Nelson or whatever way it is we want to put it in this case. But let's start with a few updates as far as the injury goes. First thing, Jason, you and I joked about this on Twitter. Addition by subtraction. Dmitri Goodson is in the concussion protocol now. While we don't want anybody to be injured and we hope he's okay and that he's able to recover, Dmitri Goodson is bad at football. And that's just the way that it goes. So he's in the concussion protocol. J.C. Tretter supposedly dodged a bullet, according to his agent, but another report came today that said he'll miss several weeks. It appears Corey Lindsley will take his place. And, you know, the other ones are Quentin Rollins, Randall Cobb, Ty Montgomery, and Clay Matthews are limited. The big name in there is Quentin Rollins. The Packers are missing a ton of corners. And Rollins is a guy they need back because we'll get to this when we get to the Indianapolis portion of things. But, you know, they don't have a matchup for T.Y. Hilton if they don't have Quentin Rollins. So Demaryius Randall, James Starks, and Jared Cook are still out. So, Jason, what as a whole do you take away from this injury situation?
Okay, well, first of all, Jacob, you showed some serious, serious self-discipline there if you have gotten the baseball game up and running in your living room. So I must verify, first of all, if you have the feed.
I do not have the feed, but it appears Dexter Fowler has hit a home run to center field.
He hit a home run to center field. I thought I heard you pause, so I thought for sure you were seeing that and blipping. But, yes, Cubs are up 1-0. So if you are listening to our show and for some reason cannot or are not watching Game 7 of the World Series, I'm shocked, I'm flattered, and I'm also here to keep you updated. Jacob and I are both here to keep you updated. So, 1-0 Cubs, top of the first inning. So, yeah, you know, this whole situation, I know that we aren't really talking about necessarily the indie game yet, and you mentioned T.Y. Hilton, and you know, one thing we have to remember is one of the good things about all these young guys playing that after you settle down and calm down, like I've managed to do since Sunday, because, yes, I was a little ranty on Sunday for sure, is that Ladarius Gunter in particular is getting some really good – he's getting in some really good snaps. He's getting in some really good opportunities, experience. You know, he was on Julio Jones. It doesn't get any better than that. It's like, you know, Julio Jones is one of the best receivers in football, if not the best receiver. So covering him, not obviously one-on-one, Clinton Dix was helping over top, but a lot of valuable experience. So I'm not going to sit here and beat the good things come from a loss. You know, this can be a positive thing. I mean, a loss sucks. Let's just be honest. It was terrible to see them lose a game, even though I didn't expect them to. Just because they only lost by 1 point at the very end doesn't make it any better for me. I mean, no, I don't want to see them get blown out. But this experience, this playing time is going to prove valuable, especially now that we're past the trade deadline. I mean, there isn't going to be much acquiring of other players at this point. The Packers roster is what it is. So they're just going to kind of have to get it done with what they got. You know, you talked about Demetri Goodson, Jacob. I'm surprised, I guess, for depth purposes, and they really like maybe what he does on special teams, although I haven't seen him do anything on special teams that's really stood out, is, you know, he's a guy that they had to count on probably more than they wanted to. Our Chiefshead TV, Zach Jacobson, you know, my colleague, gave the Goodson, he put Goodson in the good column, on the good, the bad, and the ugly, which is kind of a compliment. I haven't watched any of the film. I haven't seen anything specifically on Goodson that's come out since the game that says, hey, he really stepped up and played well. Here's why. But, you know, assuming that he's going to be with the team and he's a piece of the puzzle, if Quentin Rollins can't play again this week and you've got Randall out, of course, and Shields is out, and, you know, all these things are going to be very important for them to at least get some reps. I mean, I don't think Demetri Goodson's ever going to turn into a great cornerback or maybe even a good cornerback. And I know that sounds negative, but, you know, we have to be realistic with what this team is. But I think we saw they went toe-to-toe with a pretty good team in their building on turf. You know, it was the number one offense in the NFL. I don't know if it is anymore, and this is kind of getting long and ranty, but that was my big takeaway. And, you know, I'm looking forward to some home cooking this week and, you know, just what the doctor ordered for the Packers to kind of hopefully get back on track.
Hopefully indeed, especially considering I'll be in the stadium with a Colts fan. And we'll talk more about that later on. My big takeaway from the Atlanta game was, you know, I watched a lot on Twitter, and Jason, you're not included in this, before the game, obviously. Before the game, you know, I think you guys, a lot of you, I don't know how much fun you guys have with this. Like, a lot of you I saw giving up before the game even started. You know, one of my friends, I won't name him for the sake of that, and but he said it was going to be 51-13 Atlanta. And, you know, I get it that a lot of those players that didn't play, I mean, I joked that the inactive list looked more like a potential Pro Bowl team than it did players that should miss a game for injuries. But I just don't understand the idea of giving up before the game even starts. Like, my thought on this is sports are supposed to be fun. And I know that obviously it's more fun when the Packers win, and we all want the Packers to win. I do too. But, I mean, there are even people after the Packers win a game that aren't satisfied. And they aren't just enjoying the win week to week. You know, they want to talk about, well, how are they going to beat New England if they get to the Super Bowl? Well, the Super Bowl isn't played on November 2nd, which is where we're at right now. That's just not how it works. So I guess my advice to some of you guys, something, because I used to be that way too. You know, I used to let a loss affect my entire week, my entire day especially, and that still happens from time to time. It's still depressing when they lose on a last-second touchdown. But have fun with it. Like, it's sports. They're supposed to be fun. Like, you know, enjoy the ride of the game and go into a game and see what happens from there. Go week to week with it, and let's, you know, see what happens from there. If they win this week against Indianapolis, great. Then let's worry about the Washington Redskins. And then after that, we can worry about the Philadelphia Eagles and so on and so forth. But the Packers aren't winning a Super Bowl on November 2nd, and neither are the New England Patriots, who look to be the best team in the NFL. So that's my thought real quick early on as far as Atlanta goes. But, Jason, let's go over a few things. We have a question from our Snapchat, I mentioned it. I can guarantee, with all due respect to everyone that has ever sent us a question, this question was sent by what is probably by far the best looking person to ever send us a question. So, Miss Christina Jenkins. Christina asked, it was a two-part question, Jason, so we'll start there. Davante Adams has gotten a lot of targets the last couple weeks, and the second part of that question is, you know, what's the product of those targets? Do you expect that to continue? You know, is it a chemistry thing with Aaron Rodgers? Is it coverage rolling over to Jordy, or is Davante just better? So what do you think on the Davante Adams front?
Well, Adams, obviously, over the last couple games, has almost set a franchise record as far as catches. He's catching everything. He's making some big plays. We've talked about his running after the catch. So he's Aaron's go-to guy. He's Aaron Rodgers' go-to guy now. It's not Jordy Nelson, and that's not because Jordy Nelson's not a good receiver. Davante Adams is the man. And, frankly, we should all be thanking everything that we're thankful for that is the case, because – Jordy Nelson may never return to the form that he was in before he got hurt last year. And the Packers need that go-to guy. Eventually, Nelson's not going to be on this team. You know, I don't want to make it sound like this is the Brett Favre thing all over again, and we're talking about replacing a guy before he's ready to be done. But Davante Adams, if he doesn't regress back to what he was last year, I don't see that happening. This is one of the best surprises of this entire season, because there were so many people that were ready to write him off. Jacob, you were not one of them. You were absolutely on Team Davante the entire time. So you're far from being on that train. I wasn't on that train either, and necessarily, but I wasn't sold on Adams. There was definitely a chance that I thought that he was going to fizzle out and maybe not be what the Packers hoped he would be, and this is a second rounder that unfortunately didn't work out after so many that did work out that Ted has drafted in the past. So Davante, fantastic, and he's making tough catch. I mean, I'd like to see him start doing some of these jump balls, and I know they have to call his number in order for him to do that. It's not his fault that he's not getting them, but I want to see him start to get some of these jump balls, because that to me is when a receiver has arrived. When you're making the catches you're supposed to make, but now your quarterback trusts you to go up and take the ball, basically steal it away from the defensive back in midair. That was something that once James Jones finally decided to stop dropping balls, he started doing. He started making these crazy, twisted catches. He made a couple last year, even after a year removed of being with the Packers and at his age, which, you know, obviously not old, but older for a receiver. Davante Adams has to be probably the biggest surprise and the nicest surprise so far on this team, with maybe some competition upcoming, depending on how he does over the next few weeks, from Trevor Davis, who had a really nice touchdown catch and who also had a really nice punt return. But on the Adams front, couldn't be happier. And if he catches 10 more balls against the Colts, which he very well could, if you look at that defense and the matchup the Packers posed to them, that is a franchise record for the number of catches in a three-game stretch.
Team Davante. That's where I'm going to start. I told you guys all off season, I think the kid can play. I think he had a bad year last year. I think there were some expectations heaped on him that maybe he wasn't necessarily ready for. And realistically, other than you look at all these receivers that the Packers have churned out, other than Greg Jennings and Randall Cobb, none of them were really ready for a big role in their second year as a Packer. That's what the Packers were asking Davante Adams to do. They were asking him to be the number one receiver once Jordy Nelson went down. Now, do I think Davante Adams is a star like they said he was last year? No. I think some of it is a product of people are looking at Jordy Nelson. I think some of it is a product of Davante Adams is just a better player. He's healthy. You know, Jason, you mentioned that swagger that he has of trying to get yards after the catch, and he does that. Last year it seemed like, you know, wherever he caught the ball, that's where the play was going to end. And this year that's not the case. He's good after the catch. You saw him make a nice play on the they threw a little swing pass to him out of the backfield. Apparently he was new Ty Montgomery / Randall Cobb. So that was nice to see. You know, he's made some plays down the field. Now, he still has some lapses. You know, it looked like he should have broken off his route on the last play of the game. But even so, he's a productive player. He's a guy that a lot of people thought were going to get cut. My guy Bill Huber from Packer Report really says it best. Fans hate Davante Adams because he's not Jeff Janis. And I'm okay with that, because Davante Adams is far and away a better receiver than Jeff Janis is. And I know some of you are probably going to call in, tweet the show, snap the show, whatever, and tell me that I'm an idiot for that. But it's true. If Jeff Janis was better than Davante Adams, he would be on the field more than Davante Adams. He's not, so he isn't. Overall, I think Adams is coming into his own a little bit. I think he'll be a nice number two receiver for the team, which means you got to find somebody to kind of take, quote-unquote, Jordy's role as the number one wide receiver eventually. But overall, I mean, I could not be more pleased with the way the offense has played for the last six quarters, other than when they went into a shell in the third quarter and tried to do traditional running sets. And, you know, reality is, without James Starks, and especially without Eddie Lacy, the Packers are not going to be able to run the ball under center, two tights, and just ram it down their throat. Don Jackson and the recently released Nile Davis are not built that way. The best way for the Packers to play, it brings me back, and I hate to always do this, but it brings me back to 2010 when the Packers lost Ryan Grant, and they really went to a spread offense, possession passing game. They, you know, running the ball was really just to give Aaron Rodgers' arm a break. And that is, for those of you that want it, true West Coast offense. A short pass is just as good as a run. And if they get Montgomery and Cobb back, they'll be able to do more of those things. But the other nice thing to see, moving away from Davante Adams, Aaron Rodgers. I know he missed a couple throws during the game, but the ball came out on time. The ball came out with velocity. The ball came out with accuracy. He just looked like a better – he's looked like a better quarterback ever since he fumbled in the end zone against the Chicago Bears. And, you know, he threw four touchdown passes on Sunday against the Falcons to four different receivers, and he was doing that without Ty Montgomery and without Randall Cobb. He was doing it with Jordy Nelson, Davante Adams, and, as my good friend Ross Uglum would say, a bunch of children. Geronimo Allison just signed from the practice squad. His first catch is a touchdown. Trevor Davis caught a touchdown. The people's champ, Jeff Janis, caught what could have been the game-winning touchdown. And then, obviously, you had the one to Jordy early in the game after the big play. But it's just nice to see Aaron Rodgers, the guy that you really thought, if nothing else this season, you could count on, be the guy that you can count on. And, you know, it also brings me to the point of, Jason, what I want to get to with you here is, do you think that they should just go spread – and, you know, until Starks is back and he's limited this week, we'll see how that goes. Aren't they better in four or five wide receiver sets and kind of just abandoning the running game?
I don't know about going that route a lot, just because it becomes too predictable. And if you come up against a bad matchup with a good secondary that's got some good nickel corners, then it's going to be tough. If you don't run the football and you don't get the defense at least guessing a little bit, it's going to be tough to sustain an offense for 60 minutes. So I don't necessarily like that. I'm you know, the Packers botched the running back situation this year, and it's not lost on me that there's an injury to Eddie Lacy and James Starks that were obviously not foreseen. So it just, not carrying a third guy and then being in the mess of having to trade for Nile Davis, who didn't end up working out. He was released after less than two full weeks in Green Bay and after not doing anything. Don Jackson comes up, and, you know, he may prove to be an okay fill-in until Starks does come back. I like the spread. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. And I don't mind using the short passing game as a running game. I'm even okay. You know, I can become a believer in the receivers in the backfield if they're used properly and they're getting production out of it. Now, Montgomery set out this last game with the kidney injury, and hopefully he can return. You know, kind of a scary situation. I don't know a lot about the sickle trait. I know that I think Ryan Clark from the Steelers, when he was with the Steelers, had it and was not able to play any time that the Steelers went to Denver because of the altitude. So some health concerns there that you hope aren't going to become big. And we've heard, you know, in the media, everything that we've read has indicated that it's not going to be a long-term or a serious problem. We should see Montgomery back. You know, hopefully he doesn't hurt himself further. Cobb should come back. So you've got those guys, and this week against the Colts, absolutely go for it, because they're going to, you know, the Colts are not a strong team. So I think it depends on the opponent. Would I want to see that against like a Philadelphia in a road game? I'm not exactly sure. I mean, you get into third and long, even that second and long, it just becomes fences are, you know, putting the offense in these tougher and longer situations where you've got second and seven, second and 10, third and 10. I just don't love that. But at the, by the same token, Jacob, I think the, one of the underlying points you're trying to make, if you didn't flat out say it already, is that if the running game's not going to get any production anyway, though, then what the hell? I mean, you might as well spread it out and put five guys out there who are dynamic and that can do some special things with the football. Put a football in their hands, because you're not going to get those 5 yards that you need from Aaron Ripkowski all the time or from Don Jackson. So, you know, I guess in a perfect world, no, I wouldn't go spread the entire time. But, you know, the, with Aaron Rodgers being back, you mentioned Aaron Rodgers. You know, I've been looking this week for some specific breakdowns and some specific reasons now that the film is out on why he's bounced back these last two games. Was it because the secondaries weren't as good as what he saw against Dallas or against Minnesota, the two games the Packers really struggled in and lost? Or is he just, did a light bulb go off in his head and he just decided to start being good at football again? You know, because he's moving around and he's leaving clean pockets still. But, you know, that's a big key. Is if he can get outside and he can still make plays, then, you know, I mean, he made some of his vintage throws, like you said, Jacob, into that small window. If he's going to make those throws, you've got a case for going spread, because it's like, well, if Aaron Rodgers is going to thread the needle and put the ball where only his guy can catch it or nobody can in a window that very few people can ever or have ever hit consistently, then maybe. So I just gave you a huge diatribe, several minutes long, and I did not answer your question one iota.
What else would there be to expect on this show? You can always stay for the diatribes and really not analyzing anything at all. The reality is we're just a bunch of clowns here, and that's fine. I want to shift gears here real quick to the tight end position before we move on to the defense for the day. Richard Rodgers, I've kind of been in his corner, kind of not, because I don't think he's a great player, but I do think he has some ability that can be useful for an offense. But, I mean, he was a liability on Sunday. He was bad, ran a wrong route that was too slow. Rodgers couldn't get the ball out. That was his primary read very clearly on that play. There was a crosser to Jordy Nelson that was open, and it may have gotten him a first down, assuming Jordy actually took the first down, which he didn't do later in the game, got saved by a 12-man penalty. But if Rodgers takes that, it could be a first down. But because Richard Rodgers ran too slow, it was a sack on the play. And, you know, Jason, I don't want to get into draft stuff necessarily, but what I really want to do is, how much does this offense miss just the ability and threat of Jared Cook? Everybody, in case you forgot, the Packers signed a tight end this offseason. His name is Jared Cook. He's played two games and about a quarter and a half, and he's missed since then with a high ankle sprain, or just an ankle sprain. I'm not sure which, to be exact. He's out of a boot, but he hasn't gotten back to practice yet. McCarthy said he looks better, but we're not sure. If he has the six-week injury, he would probably miss this week and then be back next week against his old team, the Tennessee Titans. But, you know, I was excited for what Cook could bring to this offense. I think you saw a little bit what he can do against the Lions and a little bit against the Vikings as well. Also, a reminder for everybody that thought the Minnesota Vikings were this juggernaut that were just going to run away with the NFC North, watch them play against the Bears. They can't block anybody. This isn't a Viking show. We won't go into that. Jason, what I want to know is, how much does this team miss Jared Cook? And what do you do? This is another reason I'm a proponent of the 4-5 wide receiver thing, because Richard Rodgers just doesn't do a lot for an offense that's looking to throw the ball up and down the field, and that's really what they have to do.
This is such a multifaceted idea or concept or question that you're asking, because, first of all, do the Packers miss Jared Cook? Well, what is Jared Cook? I mean, you explained what he is, Jacob, so I mean, I say that kind of almost as like a rhetorical question, because he's had such a small sample size in the actual offense in games that it's hard to know what exactly he can be. I mean, I think had he stayed healthy the way that the offense was rolling against Detroit, you know, he might have broken out and had himself a game. Then all of a sudden he becomes he gets on Aaron Rodgers' radar, and we see some different things from him. Maybe he has an impact in the Dallas game. Maybe, you know, the Packers throw down a ton more points against the Bears. So, obviously, I think the idea of what they want Cook to be in terms of being able to go down the middle of the field, take advantage of that middle of the field that Mike McCarthy says is open in today's NFL because of the rules. Yes, they missed that. They, you know, JerMichael Finley, what they wanted Finley to be, I don't think he was ever always that, but that's what I think you're getting at. And, of course, the Packers need that guy. They don't have it right now. You go five wide, you can put some of the bigger guys in there and maybe, you know, they could play the tight end. I mean, Richard Rodgers, for as much as he doesn't really do a ton, and I agree he doesn't, he just doesn't have the dynamic ability to beat a lot of one-on-one coverage and get open. I mean, he's good to get you two yards if you need a couple yards. I mean, he's made some nice catches downfield. That's the thing that Richard Rodgers does, though, is that, and he, you know, he had the drop, the drop touchdown, and I'm going to assume that I think that one was against Dallas, but he makes some difficult catches at times that look like they're going to be tough, and he hauls them in. I think back to 2014 when he was a rookie, he had his first touchdown against the Patriots. That was a deep ball. I think Devin McCourty was on him, so that was a big win for him on a coverage against a good safety. He had that amazing touchdown catch in the playoffs against the Cowboys at Lambeau Field later that same season. So, but he's not that dynamic guy that I think you're talking about. And so, yes, the Packers, they definitely miss him. I think they have to find ways to replace that production until Cook can come back. And I think, if Cook is out of the walking boot, I don't know if they're just waiting until they find a matchup where they really need Cook to come back. I mean, frankly, I wouldn't do that. I would bring him back during a week when they don't need him as much, put him out there and let him get his legs back and let him get the speed of the game back in that game so that when he's playing the matchup that they want to use him to beat, like, for example, a Washington or a Philadelphia, he's fired up and ready to go and the rust is all knocked off. So, the tight end position is a staple of the offense that the Packers run, and they haven't had that person. They've been able to mitigate it because Aaron Rodgers has really stepped up and become himself again, and these receivers are all starting to jump in and play bigger roles. So they can probably get by without it, but if Jared Cook coming back would be very, very much welcome because it's only going to draw coverage away from guys like Jordy. And I think if Jordy gets more one-on-one matchups, even though he's not as fast as he was before, whether that's the injury or just reality of life right now, he's savvy enough to beat those coverages. So that's more plays on offense, for the offense. And that's kind of how I see it, because Justin Perillo is not going to play a ton of snaps. He's not going to be your go-to guy. You can't just throw Perillo in there and say, okay, well, let's put another guy in there. They just don't, we're going to talk about this later too. The Packers just don't have the horses in some areas to get it done. And that's kind of the case at tight end until Cook comes back.
One other thing that became a story during the game, Geronimo Allison scored his first touchdown on his first reception. He had a bad drop later as well, but overall for his first game, I don't think you could ask for much more for a guy that was just thrown into the fire there on offense. But his Twitter account from previous years came up, and I don't want to make it a story because I don't think it's fair. And I'll kind of give my opinion on this now. Some of those tweets came up, and trust me, they are vulgar and horrifying and just some really awful things to put on the internet. At the same time, I'll say this, those tweets came from a 17 or 18 year old Geronimo Allison. And when I was 17 or 18, Facebook was relatively new and Twitter wasn't used very much. And I know that I had very little filter when I was that age as well. I don't know if I ever said anything quite like that, but and I don't want, again, let me make this clear. I don't want to downplay what was said because it was bad. But I'm also very glad that social media wasn't as big when I was 17 or 18 as it is now, because I guarantee if I ever became famous, there are some awful things that I have said that I would regret that would come back. And there are people really downplaying or, downing Geronimo Allison for it and people saying, the Packers need to release that guy and, I get it.
his agent probably should have done a better job of going through and saying, hey, you should probably delete this tweet, blah, blah, blah. You're on an active roster now. It's going to come back. It's a bad look for PR, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, I don't think it's fair to bring up what he said as a teenager and use it against him. Jason, do you have any thoughts on this specific instance?
In theory, what you're saying is right, Jacob. I mean, but negligence by somebody in his corner who wasn't looking out for him that way. I mean, unfortunately, regardless of what your situation is, what your background is, how old you were, what the circumstances were, Laramie Tunsil had an issue with Twitter, we all remember, on draft day. You've got to have somebody in your corner who's kind of looking after that stuff, because we live in the world of instant judgment and social media, and whether it's fair or not, I'm not here to determine that, and I'm not here to state my case on that. It is something that helps people define who you are and your reputation. It's something that is going to get brought up by the media at possibly the worst time. That's just the world that we live in. So that if there's anything, it's not so much what was said, and yes, they were terrible, lewd tweets, but it was the lack of attention to that being out there. And that may fall just as much on the Packers and their PR folks as it does on Geronimo Allison saying, hey, I need a social media person. I need an agent that looks out for stuff like that. That's basically all I have to say about that. But you know what? Obviously, he addressed it, and he seems like an upstanding kid. You know, we realized after last year, okay, the Packers aren't all Boy Scouts, but I think for the most part, they go out of their way and they try to bring in guys that carry themselves well on the field and at least do and say the right thing. So I'm not too concerned on that.
So to all our younger fans that are listening to the show that are aspiring to be anything really, let me give you the simple advice of Herman Edwards, and that is do not press send. And that's really the best way I can put that for now. Let's move to the defense because kind of a mixed bag. You know, Clay Matthews didn't play. Quentin Rollins, Demaryius Randall, obviously Sam Shields did not play either. The one thing I want to get to before we do anything is there was a point in the game where the Falcons are inside the 10 looking to score. Packers brought a two-man rush, and the running back in the flat is wide open. So for those of you that are mathematicians, assuming the Packers had 11 guys on the field, that means there are 9 guys in coverage. At most, the Falcons sent 5 out, including the running back, in a pass route. How does that guy still end up wide open? That was embarrassing on every single level. First of all, I know a lot of you follow Aaron Nagler, and he talks about the 3-man rush. This was the 2-man rush. I'm a proponent of never rush less than 4. But how does – Jason, I'm at a loss. How does that happen?
Well, I have no idea, and that was one of the reasons why I was so frustrated. I mean, the test here, Jacob, yes, I'll take my medicine. I was very negative after that loss, and you got the brunt of it over text messaging, and, you know, you're my brother, so I know you can handle it. But that was one of the biggest issues that I had was, if you're not going to do the simple things, I don't care how rookie or inexperienced your players are, they're professional athletes. That's kind of like 101. I don't know what the baseball equivalent of that is, but, you know, don't make the first or third out at third base, I guess. I don't know. It's like you just, you know, whether guys are in the wrong place or not, you know, the thing that frustrated me is it's like, okay, well, if you have corners that can't cover everybody and you're going to leave somebody open anyway, then you might as well just send one on a blitz. Because if nothing else, if they're not going to cover their guy, they're at least going to try to get the quarterback down, and there's a better chance of that happening and ending the play than breaking up a pass against a receiver that somehow found an open area with way too many other guys that should have it covered. So I haven't watched any of the breakdown of it or seen any specifics in terms of that. I've talked to a couple people about that last drive who kind of look at film and break it down. They don't necessarily have a specific reason or, you know, person who's at fault. And I don't even necessarily think that's our goal here either. It's just the fact that it's very frustrating. And, of course, it happens at the worst possible time. You know, all day the Packers overachieved. I could live with how they were playing the game. They had some tough, you know, Goodson with the deep ball. I mean, that was just a really great throw by Matt Ryan, the first touchdown. You know, fine. You know, it happens. But that drive was just kind of the culmination of everything going wrong. And then you put the defense in a position to, you know, give quarterbacks all day. And I get that they're two completely different teams, but let's just, you know, I always flash back to the Giants 2011, the Giants divisional playoff game at the end of that. You know, they didn't rush Eli Manning at all. They just played coverage. And that was when the Packers defense was one of the worst passing defenses in the league. And that obviously didn't work out too well. And even when you had Tremont Williams, Sam Shields, Charles Woodson out there, you know, Pro Bowlers, still couldn't get it done. So I don't know what shows you or makes you think that not putting any pressure on a quarterback and giving him all day isn't going to pick apart a solid group of cornerbacks, let alone these, you know, children, as Ross likes to call them. And lo and behold, guys are open.
Guys were open, and, you know, that's really what happened in the last series of the game. You know, the biggest surprise on defense for me was that Julio Jones did not wreck the game the way that, I mean, obviously he's very capable of. And the Packers did a good job on him for the most part. Julio was hobbled a little bit, and you could tell he was, you know, kind of dragging a little bit, but he's still Julio Jones, and I can't I can't gush about him any more than I did last week. He's a great player, in my opinion, the best receiver in the league, one of my favorite players, and I wish the Packers had him. But they did a good job on him. Ladarius Gunter did a good job on him. What's concerning to me on that last series is one of them would have been a tougher play, the Clinton Dix play, but the Packers had two chances to haul in an interception that would have won the game. Now, like I said, Clinton Dix was a little tough, but for all the talk that Clinton Dix has gotten from myself and many others about how he's supposed to be this great dynamic player, that's what's separating him from being one of the top players in the league. You know, Earl Thomas, for example, wouldn't make that play. And that's what's separating him right now, is he hasn't made the splash plays. Now, this isn't to suggest that Clinton Dix is a bad player, because he's not. He's a very good player. If I were ranking Packers defenders, he would be in the top five. I'm pretty sure about that without actually sitting and breaking it down. However, have to make that play. That's a winning play. And the other one, Ladarius Gunter had a pick six that, I mean, it would have ended the game. And, you know, the ball hits the receiver's hands and then hits Gunter's hands, and it would have been a walk-in touchdown, and he didn't catch it. And what that leads to is this week the discussion of how the Packers are currently -2 in the turnover differential, and they, to my knowledge, have more interceptions from linebackers than they do from actual defensive backs. I know Nick Perry has one, Blake Martinez has one, and Joe Thomas has one. The only interception that comes to mind from the secondary – oh, there's two, actually. I was wrong. There's two. One just came back to me. Demarius Randall had one against Detroit before he got injured. And Morgan Burnett picked off Dak Prescott against the Dallas Cowboys. So they have two interceptions from the secondary. And I know they're playing without some of their guys. I know Rollins has missed time. Randall. Shields obviously has only played like three quarters this whole season. But, Jason, how concerned are you about the lack of – this is a defense with Dom Capers that is at the top of the league every single year in terms of turnover production, interceptions, fumbles, whatever, you know, it needs. How concerned are you about the fact that they haven't gotten a turnover yet this year?
Well, this is something I've talked about this week, that it's obviously it is a concern to me, because it's a hallmark of this defense. It's something that I don't think, you know, they don't necessarily hang their hat on anymore. They can't. I mean, this isn't the days of Woodson and Nick Collins back there picking balls off, Tremont Williams picking balls off left and right, taking it to the house like they used to. I mean, we were spoiled back then, let's be honest, and hopefully some of you still have tape of some of those games. You can go back and watch it, because that's how you play safety and defensive back. I think that the guys have been in position. Ha-ha Clinton Dix had a pick against Jacksonville that was called back because of a penalty on Burnett, ironically. So there was one that he would have had. Ha-ha Clinton Dix is a guy that I'm expecting to break out any day now, and I say any day now, and like I'm stomping my foot and looking at my watch, like, come on, son, we need you here. You know, he's the guy that's supposed to step up and be kind of a, you know, a big emerging season, a big breakout season, possibly a Pro Bowler. A lot of people, you know, put him on their radar as the, you know, the guy to watch this year on throughout the league, and we just haven't seen it. And again, I don't know schematically what he's being asked to do every week. you know, I don't know whether he's jumping up in run support. I mean, he had a couple really nice plays against the run in games. You know, he's done well in run support, and he's become a much better tackler, but he's not taking the ball away. So anytime that you don't get those turnovers, that's tough because opposing passers are going to continue to take their chances. They're going to continue to try to throw the ball because they know that there's not a good likelihood that the ball is going to get picked off. I mean, I just kind of laugh sometimes because you've got Morgan Burnett, and it just seems like whenever he's close to getting an interception, there's always a party at the ball, and it gets knocked out of his hands or he gets tripped up or something happens, you know, and he can't haul the ball in. They just don't have that guy that you can count on, but they got to start getting some turnovers because they got, you know, that's how teams win games. That's how you start getting breaks is you take the ball away, and they just didn't do that enough. Now, I've watched the Gunter play a couple times. On Sunday, I was livid. He blew it. He left the game out there on the field. Should have picked the ball off and run it back. I don't know. After looking at it a couple times, I think it would have been a tough play to make. But kudos to Gunter after the game for simply saying when he was asked, you know what, I left one out there. I probably should have made the play. He didn't want to make excuses. And I'm not saying the players should take it on the chin when they really don't have a legitimate chance to make the play. I mean, we as fans can sit here all day and say, oh, he should have caught that. It looked like he should have caught that. But you know as well as I do, when they slow the film down and you watch these replays, and we've seen a ton of it even in this World Series, plays at first base where it's like, oh, that guy was safe by a mile. No, he wasn't. He was out. You look at the replay, you see receiver gets a hand on the ball. Okay, the defensive back would have had a tough time making that catch and picking it off. So cheers to Gunter for having the right attitude, but they got to start catching the ball. I mean, you know, you go back to the Arizona playoff game last year. Sam Shields finally came back after being out with the concussion for 4 or 5 weeks. I think he had at least 2 interceptions he should have had in that game that he dropped. Now, these are the differences between winning games and not, making plays and not, and it just seems like, and I don't know if this is hyperbole right now to say that it always happens, but it just seems like whenever the Packers miss an opportunity at a turnover that they should have had, hits them in the hand and it falls down, the very next play or that drive, the opposing offense goes down and puts points on the board, and it's frustrating. So, real plain and simple. Start catching the football and start taking it away. That's how you win games in this league.
Absolutely agree. You know, you brought up a really good point is the Packers could have won that playoff game in Arizona without the Hail Mary to Jeff Janis and without overtime if Sam Shields and Demaryius Randall just catch interceptions that are thrown to them. One other one that sticks out in my head is, you know, that incredibly cold game at Lambeau Field against the 49ers, Colin Kaepernick threw an out route to, I believe it was Anquan Boldin, but Micah Hyde jumps in the air and has the ball in his hands. He just drops it. If he catches that ball, the Packers win the game. And, you know, I don't have any data on this, so I don't want to say it like it's a fact, but it just seems like every year I would bet the Packers lead the league in dropped interceptions. And that's where it's starting to get frustrating this year because they're not catching the ones that are thrown to them either. And they've had some opportunities. The Gunter one just comes to mind. The Clinton Dix play, again, a tough play. But they got to start making some dynamic plays on defense because if they don't, Andrew Luck's going to light them up this week. Andrew Luck is similar to Brett Favre in the standpoint of he'll throw you one or two a game. And, you know, the thing is you've got to catch those one or two. After that, you've got Kirk Cousins and Carson Wentz. Both of those guys are good players, but they need to be kind of exposed, I guess is the right word, probably the wrong word, but they'll throw you a couple of games too. The Packers have to catch them, especially when they're on the road. Marcus Mariota, same thing. Young quarterback, they got to confuse him, but if they confuse him, it doesn't matter if they don't catch the ball when it's thrown to him. So that's frustrating. Let's move on to Indianapolis. That is who they play. This Sunday, it's a 3:30 kickoff at Lambeau Field. I will be in attendance. It is my mother's 50th birthday present. She does not look a day over 29, though, so don't let that age number fool you. It's a bad team coming into Lambeau Field. This used to be a game, like in 2014 specifically, that I would look forward to of, I know they're going to light up the scoreboard. I know they're going to do some good things on defense, and it's going to be a fun game for me to watch. This year, kind of that way, but not really. Colts really are just a dumpster fire outside of Andrew Luck and T.Y. Hilton. They just don't – they haven't built well around a quarterback that I thought had MVP potential. I picked him to win the Most Valuable Player award last year. He responded by getting injured and not having a good season before he got injured. It's a game that Green Bay should win. But, Jason, what I want to know, the offense should be able to do their thing. My big thing is the Packers need Quentin Rollins back because I know Ladarius Gunter can't, quote-unquote, cover Julio Jones. But Julio Jones is a better matchup for Ladarius Gunter than T.Y. Hilton will ever be because Hilton is similar to Randall Cobb, but if Randall Cobb had deep, take-the-top-off-the-defense kind of speed, that's terrifying. To me, that's the biggest key this week is Rollins' health and can he do anything because, quite frankly, the idea of Micah Hyde covering T.Y. Hilton in the slot is terrifying. And the other big key to me is if Clay Matthews is back and healthy because you saw this weekend, you know, it was – there was some discussion by myself included wondering if the Packers would be okay this year. You know, in the past, without Matthews, the pass rush and the defense as a whole was kind of a dumpster fire. This year, I thought with some of the depth at outside linebacker that that would be the case. Now, they didn't do a whole lot against Matt Ryan. They had a couple sacks, but for the most part, the outside linebackers were quiet. It's clear to me that still this pass rush unit is still very reliant on the playmaker. So I think they need him back. It's a bad offensive line. I think Mike Daniels should be able to push him around. I don't anticipate a whole lot in the way of the Colts being able to run the ball because I don't think they can run block. Frank Gore has been excellent this season. He's been good against the Packers in the past, but this is a different run defense this year for Green Bay with Guyon, Daniels, and Kenny Clark. They just play the run very well against any team not named the Dallas Cowboys, and they did a good job again on Sunday against Devontae Freeman, who's a good running back. So I think you're starting to see the trend of, you know, Green Bay is a good run defense. Now, they're not all world like they were, and you saw that with Zeke Elliott coming in here and just torching the Packers. But I don't think the Colts will be able to run the ball, so they have to be able to get after Andrew Luck. That's really where this game lies in me. So Quentin Rollins and Clay Matthews. Jason, offense – or defense, you can kind of go whatever route you want here. But what do you think the keys to the game are here for the Packers to bring home a win and get them to 5-3?
I just this game couldn't have come at a better time, and I'm not trying to overdo it in terms of like, oh, this loss to Atlanta was backbreaking because it wasn't. I mean, it's one that's going to potentially determine some seedings and home field maybe later in this playoffs. If the Packers are fortunate enough to get there, which it looks like they should be. I know that you touched a little bit on Minnesota, and I know this isn't a Viking show, Jacob, but, man, what a week for that team. I mean, they have the tough game Monday night against the Bears, and I've never been a huge proponent of, like, oh, let's hang our hat on help from other teams to make the front runners in the division, you know, lose games, and then all of a sudden the Packers benefit from it. If Packers just win enough games, it doesn't matter. But certainly take it. It was great to obviously see the Vikings not gain any ground. And then Norv Turner resigns today, which was surprising. That'll be interesting to see. But, you know, I think either both sides of the ball against the Colts are gonna eat this week. I think that defensive front, I mean, Mike Daniels and that defensive front, when they smell blood, look out. Those guys are going to do some damage. I think you're going to see the return of, you know, you can take Nick Perry off the side of the milk carton this week because he'll be back. You know, he kind of disappeared a little bit, and I know that with no Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers in a limited role, Nick Perry got a lot of attention. Opposing offenses aren't ignorant to the fact that he's tearing things up this year. So, you know, he got some extra attention, and he's going to have to start learning to deal with that again. But I think you'll see him come back. I have no doubt in my mind this offense is going to be able to put up some points. If they don't, then either it's a snowstorm that I didn't see coming or somebody, they all came down with food poisoning. I just don't see the offense not rolling. And that's even if they've got a couple of subs in on the offensive line. T.J. Lang hasn't practiced this week. Even if Don Barkley has to play guard for T.J. Lang, if Don Barkley has to play at all, it's a scary thought. I think saying that gives me a little bit of agita, but I mean, even if that's the case and you got to throw Corey Linsley in there for his first action this season because Treader can't go at center, I think the offense is fine. You got Trevor Davis as a new weapon on special teams. I mean, the Colts have their work cut out for them. This is not going to be an easy game. And frankly, I haven't forgotten about 2012 and the shit show that was, and yes, I did just say that on the air, that was in the fourth quarter that I had to sit through at the Lucas Oil Stadium through, which was the last time that I went to a live game that the Packers did not win. So I'm looking for the Packers to punch the Colts in the mouth because they ruined a perfectly nice Sunday in Indianapolis for me 4 years ago, and nope, I haven't forgotten about it.
In case you guys don't know, yes, the world does revolve around Pulse of the Pack. So Jason and I fully understand that when the Packers screw up at a game, especially at a game we're at, they ruined our day, not just yours, ours as well. So before we get to the end here, Jason, I can't let us off the hook here. I want a prediction. It's a home game, 3:30 kickoff against the Indianapolis Colts. As I mentioned, I will be in the stadium, very excited to attend my first game as a fan this year. I've been doing – you know, my side job, as they call it, is fun, but there is some stuff that you lose in the way of not being a fan. And you know, now I get a chance to, you know, when Aaron Rodgers throws a touchdown pass or makes a great play, I can just scream. It'll be the first time my mom has ever seen her favorite team play. She's been to one game before. It was the opener in 2007, Favre's last year in Green Bay. We beat the Philadelphia Eagles 16-13, but she's never – been to a game where her team is playing, so I'm excited for that for her sake. However, I think the Packers prevail in this game. I'm not sure how close it is. I'm thinking like 34-17. I think the offense is back. They found a formula to help them roll a little bit. If they can get one of Cobb or Montgomery back, that dispels even more trouble for a bad defense. I think the Colts have a great player in Andrew Luck. I think they have a very good player in T.Y. Hilton. I think they have very little else around them. Dante Moncrief's an okay player, I suppose, but there's very little there that worries me on the defensive side if they can get Quentin Rollins back and get after the passer. So I got a hard time seeing a scenario where Green Bay loses this game at home. I like Green Bay 34-17 and a very happy drive home for me. Jason, what are your thoughts?
Before I give my score prediction, Jacob, we got to go back. I got to put you on the spot. I got to put myself on the spot, but I'm going to make you go first since you're kind of the host of the show. We did not do a Ticket King of the game, and we have not talked about Ticket King. So let's go back and do that from the Atlanta game, if we would, please.
Ah, of course. Ticket King of the game. Ticket King right down the street from the stadium. Thank them for sponsoring us. This week is a little tougher because it always is harder to pick a Ticket King of the game when they lose. But I'm going with what we decided after week one was kind of the cop-out answer, but I'm going with Aaron Rodgers. Four touchdown passes to four different receivers. As I noted earlier, Jordy, Devontae, and a bunch of children, you know, Jeff Janis, Trevor Davis, and Geronimo Allison all caught touchdown passes. It was a game that the Packers should have lost by 20-plus points on paper. But games aren't played on paper, and a guy like Aaron Rodgers, as Ron Wolf used to say about Brett Favre, tilt the field. And Aaron Rodgers tilts the field in the Packers' favor. And he did that on Sunday. I don't want to hear your clutch narrative because it's – I had to stop myself – because it's BS. The Bob McGinns of the world that could say Aaron Rodgers didn't do enough, I got a hard time believing that a guy who threw four touchdown passes was the team's leading rusher. And really the biggest reason was they were in the game is the reason they lost. There's like an 8% chance a team scores when they have the ball where the Packers got it for that last drive with 31 seconds or less. That's just nonsense. Credit to Matthew Bove for that number because I didn't know that, and he found it for me this week. But 8%, that means they got a 92% chance of not scoring. So I don't want to hear that Aaron Rodgers isn't clutch. He's my ticket king of the game. Aaron Rodgers is back. And I know I said that after the week three game, and it appeared not to be true. I'm going with it again. It doesn't take much to convince me that Aaron Rodgers is back, and I think Aaron Rodgers is back this time. So he is my ticket king of the game. Jason, before we get your score, ticket king of the game.
Okay, so if you're going Rodgers, and Devontae had another great day, but I'm going to go with Trevor Davis. Trevor Davis with an amazing touchdown catch. It doesn't get any better. Your first touchdown catch of your career than the catch that he made. It was just as nice of a throw by Rodgers. So no surprise that our two ticket kings of the game hooked up for one of the prettier touchdowns on the day Sunday. So Trevor Davis, he had the 55-yard punt return. This is where I think he's really going to start to factor for the Packers. If they can start flipping field position, if they can start causing a shorter field and problems for other opposing special teams units, whereas before, you know, Micah Hyde, sure-handed but not necessarily the greatest returner, had a couple nice returns in his career, but I think Trevor Davis is going to bring the noise on a much more consistent basis. So those two things right there, something to build off of, and I'm hoping Davis gets on the field. Whether Cobb is back and Montgomery are back or not, I think you got to find a way to get Davis out on the field because that speed is an asset, absolutely, and we saw it on Sunday against the Falcons. As far as the Colts go, we're almost kind of a mirror of each other, Jacob. I'm going to go 38-17, which was actually the score I was going to predict last week, flipped with Atlanta and Green Bay, but I just see this being one of those games where the Packers jump out to a really early lead. They might sit on it for a couple quarters and frustrate the heck out of us because they can't do anything with the ball and they can't, quote-unquote, step on the opponent's throat. But they'll get out to a big lead. And, you know, Jacob, it's not necessarily that Aaron Rodgers is a clutch, but they get up 28-0. You know what Skip Bayless says about Aaron Rodgers. He's just a front runner.
I cannot believe we just mentioned him on this show. Whoever's listening, just please ignore that. Now is a perfect time to remind everybody I have a very strict policy when it comes to him, and that is if you retweet something and put him into my timeline, I don't follow him because I always wondered why people would follow him and then get angry when he does his little shtick. You can see now, because there's some stuff people have sent me over the week and they were unfollowed. He's talking now. That show is getting less ratings than the WNBA Finals. He called LeBron James's block in the finals, which may be the best defensive play in basketball that I've ever seen, called it overrated, saved the game for the Cavs. They end up winning that game against the Warriors. And then this week also says that LeBron James is not a top five player in the NBA. Now, if you don't like LeBron James, that's fine. I don't understand you, but that's fine, whatever. LeBron James, at worst, is the second best player in the NBA, and I don't think it's very close, and he's the best player in the NBA. But you can look at his shtick. He's that dude in the room. There's a quote from noted philosopher Lois Griffin from Family Guy speaking about Brian Griffin and saying, whatever it is that's popular, you have to be on the other side of the argument. Otherwise, you don't feel like you're the smartest person in the room. And that's what that guy is. If we all say the sky is blue, he's going to swear up and down that it's green. You know, we say grass is green, it's orange. Something of that nature. So I don't follow him, but if you do retweet something from him, you will be unfollowed unceremoniously. I run both my personal account and the Pulse of the Pack account. You will be unfollowed from both. So if you value our follow at all, don't bring that nonsense into my timeline. So, Jason, shame on you for doing that on this show.
Yeah, I'll take my lumps. It was worth it because you reminded me of the existence of one, and I quote, noted philosopher Lois Griffin of Family Guy. And that is what I'm taking away from this show tonight. That is an early holiday gift from you. You are the man.
I do what I can. So that'll do it for today's show. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. I want to thank our sponsor, Ticket King. Right down the street from the stadium, we have our Ticket King of the Game every week. So go in, grab your tickets right down the street from the stadium, walk a couple more steps, go up to gates this weekend with me, and cheer on the Pack. So I'll be more than happy to do that with you this week. If you're going to the game, let me know. I'll wave, I'll say hello, whatever you guys want to do. Should be a good time this weekend. Packers, Colts, 3:30 kickoff. I like Green Bay to win big. So does Jason. So it should be a fun weekend for us. We hope we're right in this case. Last week we were right, but not really at the same time, I guess. We were right in picking Green Bay to lose, but not by the point margin that we had. You can follow the show on Twitter. We are at Packer Pulse. We also have a Snapchat account that is also Packer Pulse. So add us, send us questions. Thank you to Christina Jenkins for doing that today. You definitely added some substance to the show, which this show is desperately in need of. You can follow me personally. I am at Jacob Westendorf, and you can follow Jason. He is at Jason Perrone. Thank you all. I know it was tough on Sunday. Enjoy the rest of the World Series tonight. And as always, thank you for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
House of the Pack podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at TicketKing.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.